You've been shot. How many times have you been shot?
9 times.
9 times.
Yeah, it was only one situation, though. It was one.
Well, yeah, okay.
50 Cent's life is a masterclass in survival and savage ambition.
He said it's the definition of street hip-hop.
Surviving the brutal streets of Queens in a near-fatal shooting, 50 Cent went from the ultimate underdog to a rap legend with Get Rich or Die Trying.
That Get Rich or Die Trying run is unprecedented.
Crazy.
Like to this day.
This is the story of a man who was born with nothing and built an empire that spans music, business, and film.
He's an artist, an entrepreneur, an actor, a director, a producer. He can juggle. He's great at Scrabble. He pretty much does it all.
This is the story of 50 Cent. Fifty Cent was born Curtis James Jackson III on July 6th, 1975, in Queens, New York City.
So that's in near New York. That's one of the suburbs of New York, which is, I imagine is a tough area, despite the fact that it's called Queens, which makes it sound kind of friendly. Yeah.
He grew up in the rough South Jamaica neighborhood with his mom, Sabrina, who was a drug dealer.
I never knew my father. You know, I never actually met him.
I think it's like that anyway for mom versus the dad. When it's a male child, mommy's everything.
She had me when she was 15, so, you know, back then it wasn't as common as the young girls have children at 15, a little more now than they did then. So at that point, she started hustling to be able to provide for me at that point.
And she was involved with what? She was...
Yeah, selling drugs.
Selling drugs.
Yeah.
Sabrina, every time when she came around, she had a smile that would light up the room. She was the party, you know, like her personality. If you didn't know her, she ain't talking to you. If you knew her, I'm like, just to be around her was real cool.
At only 8 years old, Curtis's world was torn apart when his mom was mysteriously shot and died.
At the end of the day, like her count wasn't right. So I guess that you either had to pay up in cash, or unfortunately she had to pay with her life.
For me, I don't think I really dealt with it in the early stages, Larry, because I lost my mom when I was like 8, so I didn't really understand at that point. But later, like, they would consistently say, oh, well, you know, she's not coming back. And I'm like, yeah, she is. Duh.
Yeah.
You know, like, my grandfather looked at me like, hey, he really doesn't understand in the early points. But then later, you know, you grow and you start to understand a little more.
The streets would have swallowed him up if his grandparents hadn't stepped in.
Yeah, we didn't have much. Like, you know, I grew up with my grandparents. You know, because my mom, she got killed when I was 8 years old. I had to live with them full time, and I went and stayed with them. And it was like, we was living on my grandfather's income. So he was real old-fashioned. He's representation of tradition for me. So he would just come and give my grandmother this check. And I never understood that growing up. I was like, you just gonna give her the whole check? He's like, yeah, what's the matter with you? Like, and then later, like as an adult, he'll tell me, he said, you couldn't see it and you won't understand it because you was a baby. He said, but when I gave your mama the check, he said, when I gave your mama the check, it stopped her from looking at things I couldn't give her. Because she was aware of what was really there. It made my responsibilities her responsibilities.
Obviously, Jackson didn't have a typical childhood. By 12, he was already selling crack on the streets, making money under his grandparents' noses while they thought he was in some after-school programs.
And so how old were you when you got involved in selling drugs yourself?
Around 12.
12 years old, man.
Yeah.
That's really difficult for someone from my background to understand.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like such an alien concept.
Since even at 12, you know, you still have to live by your parents' rules.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, you can't just be out hustling. Like, I had to have my grandparents think I was enrolled in an after-school program.
Well, in a way, you were.
Yeah.
and then didn't you... When did you...
50 is damaged because
He didn't know his father, and his mother passed early on.
And his mom was in the streets, so she got killed.
Yeah,
there's no parents there. Your grandparents are older. You're damaged, bro. You was outside. The streets taught niggas.
Carrying guns and cash to school, he was eventually caught by metal detectors in 10th grade at Andrew Jackson High. Then soon after, he got busted selling crack to an undercover cop. Weeks later, a search of his house turned up heroin, more crack, and a pistol.
Well, when I got to high school, my first year, I got arrested at school.
And how old is that? Because I'm not sure. High school was about 17, 16?
Yeah, 16.
Okay. And you went to jail for how long?
The first time, it wasn't a long time. I just, you know, because it was a juvenile situation. And then the second time, I was gone for 7 months.
Right.
Sentenced to prison, he only served 7 months in boot camp. Job! Walking out with a GED and a new mission. He took on the name 50 Cent, a name that shouted survival, hustle, and self-reliance. The name was inspired by Kelvin Martin, a 1980s Brooklyn robber known as 50 Cent. To Jackson, Martin was more than a name. He was an icon of strength, a man tough enough to survive anything, determined enough to make his own way, no matter the cost.
The original 50 was a modern day Omar from The Wire. If you seen 50 coming, you know you in trouble. If you wasn't cool with it.
Jackson's rap journey started humbly, recording over instrumentals in a friend's basement using turntables. In 1996, the same friend introduced him to Jam Master Jay from Run DMC, who was starting his own label. Jay became Jackson's mentor, teaching him the essentials, how to count bars, write catchy hooks, structure his songs, and make real records.
You know, so I would write a verse and it'd be 12 bars, sometimes 14, sometimes 18. You know, anything but 16 bars, you know what I mean? And he kind of trained me to write the chorus. And he was like, he'd make me write the chorus to the record 3 or 4 times before I started. And this is why sometimes I have habits based on that. And sometimes I'll put more than one melody on the actual record. So, like, for example, in P.I.M.P., I'll start off and go, I'm a P.I.M.P.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you heard about me. And then there's a point on the record where I'm going, I'm about my money, you see. You not letting me. If you with me. So there's a bridge area almost on the record. And I learned to do those different things from the Jay's tool itself.
Jam Master Jay trained him well, helping him master hook writing and laying the foundation for his first but unreleased album.
My man 50 Cent, straight from Southside, Jamaica, what up, Queens. What up, dog?
What up? Everything good? Chilling.
Jamaica, man. I'm from South Dozone.
By 1999, however, Jackson had outgrown the Jay label. He signed with Columbia Records under Trackmasters and hit the studio hard, recording 36 tracks in 2 weeks. 18 of those songs made it onto Power of the Dollar, his raw 2000 debut. His popularity exploded with How to Rob, a daring, funny track he wrote on a quick car ride to the studio. The song mapped out in detail how he'd rob the biggest stars in hip-hop. This track stirred up positive responses from icons like Jay-Z, DMX, and the Wu-Tang Clan, and even got him an invite from Nas to join the Nostradamus tour. But shortly after, however, Jackson was shot 9 times and ended up in the hospital, putting his career on hold.
I forget, why did the guy shoot you 9 times? Was it drugs or something?
He was paid to do it.
He was paid to do it?
Yeah.
Who would want to shoot you?
Why were you targeted?
You're such a good guy.
It's my past.
It was a drug thing? No, like a business thing?
It's karma.
I've asked yourself, because you've been shot. How many times have you been shot?
9 times.
9 times.
Yeah, it was only one situation, though. It was one.
Well, yeah, okay. But they kind of went for it, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Someone, you know, felt like that I would potentially do something to them if they kept going in the direction that they were going.
Man, you are tough.
On May 24th, 2000, Jackson was ambushed outside his grandmother's former home in South Jamaica.
The guy got robbed in the actual neighborhood.
And he accused you of robbing.
No, no, he just seen me communicating with someone who actually
robbed him.
Actually robbed him. And he misinterpreted the conversation because he seen me laughing and us talking, but he didn't know I grew up with the guy.
He had just gotten into a friend's car when another vehicle pulled up and a gunman walked over, firing 9 shots at him with a 9mm handgun.
I came and sat down into the car, and the guy came from out of another vehicle and ran up on the other car.
So, and I just didn't see the person coming, or I would have avoided it.
Yes.
Jackson was hit in his hand, arm, hip, both legs, chest, and left cheek. His face injury left him with a swollen tongue, a missing wisdom tooth, and a slight slur in his voice.
Most of them in the legs, like I hit my hand and I hit in the face. So, like, a fragment portion of it is in my tongue. So it kind of changed the way I speak a little bit. Like,
it shot my hand, my thumb came out my hand, my face.
It shot in the face?
Yeah.
Where did that come out?
Like the tooth.
Wow, oh my goodness, there's a hole there.
Yeah,
I don't know why I'm surprised the bullet went through there, but it's alarming.
Yeah, it kind of changed my voice too, and this is the voice that sells 8 million records, so I think everything happens for a reason.
He and his friend, who was also wounded, were rushed to the hospital, where Jackson stayed for 13 days. 3 weeks later, the suspected shooter, Daryl Homicide Baum, who was close friends with Mike Tyson, was killed.
You say the guy who shot you is dead now, right?
Yeah, he's dead.
How did he die?
Same thing.
Somebody shot him?
Yeah.
After the shooting, Jackson needed a walker for 6 weeks and fully recovered in 5 months. But when he left the hospital, things got worse. He was dropped by his label and blacklisted in the industry. Feeling rejected by the U.S. market, he moved to Canada, recording over 30 songs for mixtapes to keep his name alive.
He was putting out mixtapes. It seemed like every single week there was another mixtape. He was taking other people's beats and he was destroying them, right?
Hustling hard, Jackson sold those mixtapes from the back of his own car, building his reputation on his own terms.
The truth is, nobody knew what was going to happen to 50 at that point. Like, you know, shit got quiet, it died down. 50 came back, he hit the mixtapes. He did all the G-Unit stuff, like, you know, 50 just, he hit the streets. All the mixtape DJs, everybody.
With his popularity on the rise, Jackson released Guess Who's Back in 2002. The mixtape made waves, landing in Eminem's hands.
And Eminem, he had got his hands on a copy of a mixtape that I put out.
Blown away by what he heard, Eminem didn't waste time. He invited Jackson to Los Angeles and introduced him to Dr. Dre. This was the turning point Jackson had been fighting for.
I flew to Los Angeles to meet with him, and when he called and told me, like, M wants to meet with you, I was like, all right. Like, he's like the biggest artist in hip-hop.
Yeah.
At the time.
And he sure.
I said, okay, I'll fly, you know. I didn't want to get my hopes up or get excited. And then when I got there, he was like, yo, this is it. This is the next big thing. And I was like, okay.
Clear memory of the first time I met 50. And I think one of the things I noticed when he first walked into the room was his presence, right? Because it just kind of felt like he's going to be a star. Like, just the way he carried himself, swagger, everything. Like, I don't know. It just seemed like he was the whole package.
Okay, so can you guys talk a little bit about how, you know, Dre and M, can you talk a little bit about 50 and how you guys, when you first heard him, what you thought and how you guys hooked up together?
I'll take credit for that.
You should.
Semi-credit. I heard it. I brought it to Dre. Dre heard it. He was sold. And basically we said, let's do a joint venture. Like, let's, me and you get involved.
Yeah, this is perfect. Them sitting like 50-50 on 50. Like,
yeah.
Break it in half.
That's it.
After signing a $1 million record deal, 50 Cent released his debut album, Get Rich or Die Tryin', in early 2003.
So I did the Get Rich or Die Tryin'. It was supposed to be me producing half of the album and Eminem producing the other half. I was in the studio with 50 for just 7 days for my entire half of the album.
Yeah.
He came in there and went crazy. writing. All right, put up another one. Writing, put up another one. And we got the entire thing done in 7 days, at least my half.
This album stands out because there's not a single bad song. Every track delivers.
That Get Rich or Die Trying run is unprecedented.
Crazy.
Like to this day, not only, of course, I'm going to say I've never seen it in New York because I'm from New York. Right. And New York at the time, we ran the world. If it ran in New York, it ran all over. Right. But that run has never been duplicated.
But you know what I mean?
Compared to the albums he put out later, which often vary in quality, Get Rich or Die Trying feels complete and intentional.
50 Cent told me out of his mouth.
Yeah.
He studied Doggy Style thoroughly.
Nice.
Before he did Get Rich or Die Trying.
50 brings something raw and introspective, like he poured everything he had into this project. The lead single, Into Club, set a Billboard record as the most listened to song in radio history within a week. The album was a massive success, but part of 50 Cent's appeal was his look. Muscular, covered in tattoos, often in a bulletproof vest, sometimes even holding a handgun. He looked like he was ready for battle, and he'd lived the kind of life that made his lyrics feel real. Unlike others in the game who just talked big, 50's lyrics came from experience, and fans could feel that brutal authenticity. In 2003, Interscope took a chance on 50 Cent's new label, G-Unit Records, and it paid off. He signed loyal friends Lloyd Banks, Tony Yayo, and Young Buck, and later brought in the game through a joint deal with Dr. Dre's Aftermath. G-Unit Records released Banks' debut album, The Hunger for More, which went platinum, with 50 even appearing on the hit track, On Fire. In 2005, 50 released another hit album, The Massacre, continuing to rap about drugs, crime, and sex. The album sold over 1 million copies in just 4 days and held the top spot on the Billboard 200 for 6 weeks. He became the first solo artist to have 3 singles, Candy Shop, Disco Inferno, and How We Do, in the Billboard Top 5 at the same time. By November, he'd even moved into gaming with 50 Cent Bulletproof, making his brand unstoppable. But then Kanye West disrupted everything. No look at 50's career is complete without mentioning his legendary feud with Ja Rule, a beef that's one of hip-hop's longest, pettiest, and most intense rivalries, lasting over 20 years.
And there's something going on between you and Ja Rule, who's another rapper. I don't know how many people are familiar with him. I'm sure rap fans obviously are, but other people who aren't as into rap won't know. But he's a talented man as well. He seems to be doing very well for himself.
Not anymore.
Okay.
The story kicks off in the late 90s in Queens, where Ja Rule, blending tough lyrics with smooth melodies, was making a name for himself under Irv Gotti's label Murder, Inc. Meanwhile, 50, also from Queens, was struggling to break into the scene. Both were streetwise hustlers, navigating their way through both the streets and the music business.
We really have nothing in common other than we're from the same neighborhood. That's the only thing that we really have in common. You understand? We're two different people. You know what I'm saying? I'm a stand-up nigga. He's not. You understand? And that's really the basis of who we are.
According to 50, their feud began after a friend of his robbed Ja Rule.
Rule got robbed by Troy from Baisley, this nigga from the project, and 50 was cool with him, and that's how it kind of all started.
Okay.
Ja, however, tells it differently.
A dude that I knew, that I fucked with from Southside, came home from jail, came on my block one night, seen me on my block one night, came to see me. He pulls out the burner on me. So now I'm shocked. You know what I'm saying? Because I know this, like I know him. I fucks with him. So now I'm shocked. So he pulls out the burner on me. He's like, yo, you holding your strap? I'm like, nah, I ain't got nothing on me right now. You pat me, whatever.
So you gave him the chain?
Of course. I said, yeah.
It's a gun in your face?
They got a gun on you, nigga. The nigga with the gun. You know what I'm saying? It's the winner, nigga. Yeah. Hands down. The guy with the gun won. You know what I'm saying? All right, yeah. You got the gun? All right, yeah, nigga. Take that. Hold on to that, nigga. Okay. Not a problem. You know what I'm saying? So I guess the story got back in the hood of what happened. And so 50 used that as his in to have something to say about me. You feel what I'm saying? Okay. But it had nothing to do with him. Like, I didn't even know you know this dude. You know what I'm saying? His story is, I seen him with Troy out and about, and I got mad at him. Like, nigga, you had nothing to do with it. Why would I get mad at the guy next to the guy? You understand what I'm saying? Like, his stories just don't add up. They just don't make sense.
Whatever the real story, the tension between them grew darker and more intense. By 2000, the rivalry hit a boiling point. The two ended up in the same studio and a fight broke out. 50 reportedly punched Ja and Ja's crew retaliated. During the brawl, Ja's associate, Black Child, allegedly stabbed 50 Cent, leaving him with both a physical and psychological scar that would fuel their beef for years.
I was there.
Yeah.
So it was Black Child, it was Ja Rule. I don't know, somebody else.
And so he swings at me. You know what I'm saying? He caught me a little bit, you know what I'm saying? But I dipped it and then hit him with the bat. Boom! So now we start tussling. We tussling. Now my niggas is there. He got a few niggas with him there. Me and my niggas proceed to whoop his ass while his niggas did nothing.
Motherfucking 50 crutches
got,
and shit.
50 got stabbed that day, right? He didn't get stabbed,
Vlad,
right?
Shut the fuck up with that shit.
Okay.
He got the cut. Motherfucker had a scratch.
He got cut a little.
At the end of the day, I've never been beat up. I've never been stabbed up. I've never been shot up. You know what I'm saying? These are all the things that happened to him.
As Ja Rule gained fame with hits like Always On Time and Put It On Me, 50 went on the offensive with the track Your Life's On The Line, aimed straight at Ja Rule and Murder, Inc.
Ja Rule had nothing but radio hits, right? Which is fucking amazing, because I always tell people that Ja Rule was like the early 2000s Drake.
100%.
Before 50. Like Drake, Ja was Drake. He couldn't fucking miss.
Yeah.
And he also put on like fucking Christina Milian. He had J-Lo. He
Ashanti.
Had like Ashanti.
Yeah.
Like Ja couldn't fucking miss.
50 knew he'd need big names behind him. And that support came when Dre and Eminem signed him. With industry giants backing him, 50 dropped Wangsta, a track mocking Ja Rule as a fake gangster. The song hit hard and fans latched onto it, putting Ja Rule's street image under fire.
I feel like 50 had too much rolling. Number one, Wangsta was fucking crazy. Right. At that time, you remember how the hi-hats and the drums, if they were hitting a certain way and you had a good flow, which is what he did on In The Club too. It wasn't part of the beef, but just 50s, the way that 50 raps melodically over dope ass fucking drums is just gives him an edge. Plus his pen is crazy. When he gets angry, he like 50 is with all the shit. So 50 with the shit.
Just as 50 Cent was reaching new heights, Murder, Inc. faced a major setback. In 2003, the label came under federal investigation for suspected connections to drug money, which drained its resources and damaged its reputation. Although the charges were eventually dropped, the label's power and finances never fully recovered, leaving Ja Rule in a weakened position.
It was a lot going on in that time frame. You got the federal indictment.
He couldn't even fight back.
No, probably. But here's what it is. It was orchestrated very well. He was a part of the juggernauts at that moment. Eminem, Dre. They were very, very big in what they were doing as well. Mm-hmm. So as we were big over on our side, they were also big on our side, on their side. And as everything started to crumble for us, as far as we didn't have a label as a home anymore. Mm-hmm. You understand? There was a lot of things that were falling apart for us. It was easy for him to
get people to turn on.
Bulldoze.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there was things that were behind the scenes that y'all don't see that also made us seem more irrelevant. You know, like, we couldn't go to award shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They would make calls like, well,
We got 50 and we can't be in there because if
Murder Inc. is in the building, they're not going to perform this year. M's not going to perform. So we would get calls from MTV. Much love. Shout out to MTV. Or we get calls from BET. Shout out to BET.
Yeah, even hell.
That, yo, we love you guys, but guys, they're doing their thing this year, and we don't want y'all in the building because of this. So now as the fans look, they're like, yo, this dude is really crushing them. Like, they're not even, they don't even show up at the awards no more. You don't even see these guys anymore.
Still, Ja wasn't ready to give up. He released Loose Change, a diss track going after not just 50 Cent, but also Eminem, Dre, and the rest of their crew. The track was aggressive and personal, but by then, 50 Cent was a superstar, and Ja's response didn't hit as hard as it might have earlier.
But as far as like 50 and Ja Rule, like 50 came in, he had Dre, he had Eminem, and he had the power of his pen, and he had the world on his shoulders, and all the fans had his back, and so there was no competing with that.
Then, in 2018, 50 Cent took the beef to a new, hilarious level. He bought 200 front row seats to a Ja Rule concert, leaving them empty to make it look like Ja was performing to a half-empty crowd. Beyond his feud with Ja Rule, 50 Cent became known for his strategic use of conflicts to stay in the limelight. One of his early targets was The Game. Their relationship soon fell apart over loyalty issues, with The Game refusing to support 50 in his other disputes. This led 50 to publicly kick him out of G-Unit, sparking a heated rivalry that included diss tracks, street clashes, and even a shooting outside Hot 97 radio station.
Because I knew that I was at war with somebody who was willing to, you know, go to war in the streets as well. You know what I'm saying? So he wasn't scared. I wasn't scared. I think I had a little bit of more momentum, and he had a little bit more to lose because he was a little bit more successful than I at that point.
50 also had minor clashes with Rick Ross, Fat Joe, and DJ Khaled. These rivalries highlight a key tactic in his career, using beef as a promotional tool to keep his name in headlines and his image ruthless. In 2007, however, he faced off a different battle against another big name, Kanye West. Both were at turning points in their respective careers. Both were dropping their all-important third albums on September 11th, 2007.
I mean, this is big for hip-hop for us to be coming out on the same date, but Kanye West doesn't stand a chance.
50, with Get Rich or Die Tryin' and The Massacre, was by now the undisputed king of gangsta rap, blending street grit with chart-topping hooks. But Kanye was no ordinary challenger. Known as a visionary producer, he turned into a star with The College Dropout and Late Registration, becoming a new voice for hip-hop in the digital age.
Now, you guys both represent two totally different styles in hip-hop. Do you guys feel that all these different styles can coexist with each other?
He was saying, do you feel like all the styles coexist?
Of course. You know what I mean? Everybody's, they had a different preference. I feel like I'm at a point in my career that people, I'm Muhammad Ali right now. You know what I mean? And what I mean is a lot of people watch, but they don't necessarily want to see me win because I won so big in front of them in a short period of time. You know what I mean? So it's all the way good.
What do you guys think of the state of hip-hop?
The two appeared on the cover of Rolling Stone, faced off with a stare down at the 2007 VMAs just days before their albums dropped, and the excitement for the release of Graduation and Curtis was at an all-time high.
I'm never nervous. If I win, I win. If I lose, I win. I'm here. I'm like, I'm standing. I'm next to 50. I'm next to you right here. My big brother just came out. It's a moment for me right now.
In the end, Kanye took the win, with Graduation pulling in massive first week sales and securing the number one spot on the Billboard 200. Kanye's win wasn't just about numbers, though. It clearly marked a shift in hip-hop's direction. signaling the commercial decline of gangster rap. But 50 wasn't done just yet.
The title of my new album, Before I Self-Destruct, is it's about the actual cycle of success from an artist's perspective. Generally, the general public builds artists and entertainers for the sake of entertainment and destroys them.
In 2009, 50 Cent dropped Before I Self-Destruct, hitting number 5 on the Billboard 200 and marking his 4th top 5 album. But the critics were less impressed, and the mixed reviews hinted that his reign was coming to an end. By then, 50 had made his share of enemies, and many were eager to declare his downfall.
It's interesting because once you're successful and you publicly know it, you become a target, a bullseye.
The rapper's highly publicized bankruptcy in 2015 only bolstered that impression. But as any pugnacious New York entrepreneur will tell you, sometimes declaring bankruptcy is a way of protecting your financial future. Plus, 50 Cent had a few other projects up his sleeve.
About a year ago or so, you declared bankruptcy. You said you're out of money. And then you irritated the judge in the case because you started posting all these pictures of you that seem to indicate that you have a ton of money. You put up this picture right here of you eating a money sandwich.
Yep.
However, back to 2009, 50 launched Cheetah Vision, a production company focused on action thrillers for foreign markets and on-demand streaming. But his most powerful move was joining forces with The Good Wife writer Courtney A. Kemp to create Power. The show followed James Ghost St. Patrick, a drug dealer desperately trying to escape the crime world and make it as a nightclub owner, but failing each time.
Uh-huh. You know, the project for me, like, and the way it did, the suspense that they captured in the actual episode is what kept people on the edge of their seat and anticipating this season.
Over 6 seasons, Power built a massive following, turning into one of Starz's top shows.
Power, I remember you came here when it first started, yeah, and you were doing the show, and now it's become this, like, big culture. I'm surprised you're ending the show.
The Los Angeles Times called it a powerhouse of the premium cable landscape. While it didn't get the media buzz of Fox's Empire, Power consistently grew its viewership, spawning multiple spin-offs and winning a number of awards.
Best show on TV, Power. Wow. Best show on TV.
Super humble.
Amari.
50 Cent's fingerprints all over the show are obvious. Its aesthetic, its hard-hitting soundtrack, and its raw storytelling are a testament to his lasting impact in entertainment. While he focused on building his TV empire and expanding his business ventures, 50 also continued to release music and feature on other artists' tracks. But it wasn't until 2014 that he finally dropped his 5th studio album, Animal Ambition.
The idea of coming back now was cool to come out. I'm just going to do the new music, some new music that I actually created.
Musically, Animal Ambition is a bit all over the place. It feels like 50 and his producers couldn't decide on a sound, shifting between stripped-down simplicity and heavy, cluttered beats. The album kicks off with the lackluster single, Hold On, which fails to grab attention. The energy picks up with the second track, Don't Worry About It, a typical club song in the 50 Cent style. After a few party tracks, the album returns to his gangster roots in the second half. Animal Ambition lived up to expectations, but by then, those expectations were already low.
The new 50 Cent record, completely goonish, depraved, boring hip-hop. No idea why 50 Cent even came back, but I guess it's because people still think 50 Cent is interesting. So this is easily some of 50 Cent's worst material ever.
But something remarkable happened as time went on. The culture started to rediscover 50 Cent's music. It might be nostalgia, as millennials crave the beats that defined their youth. But in 2020, his anthem, Inda Club, became only the second pre-YouTube rap video to reach 1 billion views after Eminem's Without Me. Then in 2022, 50 Cent took the Super Bowl stage with icons Dr. Dre, Eminem, Snoop Dogg, Kendrick Lamar, and Mary J. Blige, a defining moment for hip-hop's impact on mainstream culture.
When Super Bowl went down, everybody like popped up and popped off.
That was Dre. That's Dre too. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? It's Dre and really M, because he wouldn't do it without me.
Right.
Even now, 50 Cent is a force in the entertainment world. From dominating rap to producing hit TV shows, he's shown he can adapt, evolve, and stay in the spotlight.
He's an artist, an entrepreneur, an actor, a director, a producer. He can juggle. He's great at Scrabble. He pretty much does it all.
His journey from the gritty streets of Queens to becoming a rap legend proves the power of grit, hustle, and ambition.
They're gonna always look at his work because he's the biggest artist. But when you see his work ethic, when you see a guy that's a multi-millionaire working harder than artists he got or artists that don't even have nothing, you gotta put that work in. I learned that from Fifth. Like, you talking about a guy that's probably never been late ever.
50 Cent hasn't just made his mark on hip hop, he's built an empire that goes beyond music.
I don't usually see people excited leaving the tables in Vegas if they didn't put chips on the table. You know, you make investments in different things. Sometimes they win, sometimes they don't. More losses than wins, but when you do win, you win so big, it makes up for everything. That's been the journey.
Though controversies have been a part of his story, they've only added to his appeal, showing fans a raw, unfiltered personality.
He said it's the definition of fucking street hip-hop. No, if you're talking about hip-hop and street, it you should have fucking 50's picture on that shit.
His legacy remains unbeaten, and his influence on hip-hop and pop culture will continue for generations.